And good evening. It's Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, which is always a very interesting talk, we have Tracy McBurney here. And, well, we're not sure what we're talking about, but we are just going to start. We're going to start with something that was channeled to her, which was just a simple comment. And then we got started talking about everything that kind of came out of that. And we're just going to talk about that. So, welcome, Tracy.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Gazing out
your skylight.
Oh, yeah, we're doing it. Okay. Yeah. So let's start with this graduation that you...
Okay. So I was at an Institute of Holistic Nutrition graduation ceremony on Saturday. And as I leave those things always, I just kind of go, okay, divine, okay, guides, you know, what is it that I'm supposed to say? In other words, as I said in that speech, I said, you know, I could be just under a complete illusion still running my life that I'm supposed to come here to these graduation ceremonies and say something that might potentially be new, that might potentially be something that you just do not know from the invisible world. But again, what I said to the students is this still might be my illusion, but it's still guiding me. So humor me. So this is what comes through. So what came through was actually a response to something that the teacher speaking previous to me had alluded to. And I got transmitted, tell them to evoke the divine healer within themselves. Hmm. Tell them that. And of course, I knew what that meant. Like I had a real clear idea of that because... although I don't say it as simply as that, I've got this lovely kind of prayer or evocation that I say, which I think you've heard me say before, which is from the spark of pure love and light that resides within me. I connect to source and I give thanks. And from this place of oneness, connection, purity of heart, pure love, purity of motive, love unconditional and grace, I now ask or I now give permission for. But they made this very simple. To literally just say, I evoke. Remember, we are free will beings, right? I evoke the divine healer within myself. Well, the feeling was really quite astounding. There was, if you do it, if you just do it, if you just shut your eyes and do it so that you can be present with who you are in the moment before you say those words, and then what you are feeling after you say those words, all of the students in the class that I walk them through this little exercise on Tuesday, the ones that could feel some sort of shift, all had some different version of what that felt like. The ones that could feel, that were not senseless, really would say, wow, I feel more grounded. Wow, I feel tingling in my arms. Wow, I feel heavier, but it's a good heavier. I feel more grounded, more stable. I'm just waiting for your cough to be done. I'm just taking a little pity on you.
It's so funny because it's like as soon as I did that, I started coughing. I was like, hey, nice.
So it was very, I mean, I'm a Virgo, so I like efficient. Mm-hmm. Although I also, there's got to be some sort of a writer in me because I like to, you know, co-create these lovely little passages. I also like efficiency. So this evoking the divine healer, it worked for me. I work with a lovely woman, a naturopath, Virginia Martin, and to me, I see her as, you know, the doctor for our family. Yes. She is my mentor. She truly is my mentor. And so she really helped me to clarify about 3 years ago this idea that, you know, Tracy, you don't work for yourself. You kid yourself by thinking that you work for yourself. You should never for one moment be in your office working for yourself. It's not what you should be doing. Hmm. It's like we need to, again, extensively evoke the divine healer within ourselves so that our ego is not involved in that process. We have a greater level of clarity that comes through, a greater level of wisdom that comes through. In other words, we take ourselves out of the equation. So, you know, I kind of thought, wow, I kind of get a little bit of the short end of the stick, right? I still have to pay the hydro bills. I still have to pay the rent, the mortgage. I still have to pay all of that. But, and I don't work for myself. But, you know, it was really, really good to have her clarification of that those years ago. So this was just kind of a further remembering and reminding on that Saturday to literally say to these graduates, you know, give your head a shake. If you're leaving this hall today thinking you've got this certificate and you're going out to work for yourself, I might just want to introduce a concept to you that you should never be working for yourself. So it was that piece for sure delivered to the graduates. Hmm. But it was also really something very linked into a piece of work that I have struggled with, that I've been in conflict with, that I have a love-hate relationship. And this is the work of a gentleman by the name of Dr. Gerd Hommer. And he brings forward this, I think, which is truly a gift to this earth. He brings forward this work that he calls the German New Medicine. And you can find out lots about this work on the website germannewmedicine.ca. This is a website that was put forward by one of his, I think, greatest teachers, right? Yes, obviously a student of his, but an incredible teacher, may even be a better teacher of his own work than he is. In other words, this man's brilliant. Wow. I do think that he has nailed this idea of understanding how animals get into what he calls biological conflicts and how they get out of biological conflicts. And so he is studying us as the animal, the human animal. And everything that he brings forward in the pages that she gives you in a PDF file or in a video file on her website make more sense than anything I have ever seen in any medical textbook that gives me a reasoning for disease, as we call it, the cancers, as we call it. He introduces concepts to us that just we have to give our head a shake. Like, what do you mean that cancer is not, that we're calling cancer this when you won't use the word, really? Hmm. You'll call this cell proliferation or cell augmentation. In other words, the carving away of cells or the growing of more cells. And he looks at that when he's studying the biological animal, and he says that is a natural biological response to a biological conflict. The body is either carving cells for meaningful purpose, or it's making more cells for meaningful purpose, and that will stop doing this when the conflict is fully resolved. And he is very clear about this idea that this is not psychological conflict, this is biological conflict. So to him, a biological conflict is created in the animal of you when something unexpected that takes you off guard creates a shock that goes into your brain, and then literally within seconds, on autopilot reaction, you take it in, you perceive it, you perceive that shock, you perceive that moment a certain way. And what he says is because of your way of perceiving what just happened to you, then that is where the shock is now going to go in the organ and tissue system of you.
Interesting.
So there's always this unexpected component. Anyway, get back to that maybe in a second, but how is that relevant to this evoking the divine healer piece? I started to look at this new medicine work, this German new medicine work, about 15 years ago. And I was studying
it. Not so new anymore.
But. No. I was studying it for one big long weekend. I can't remember whether it was 3 or 4 days. Anyway, it was an intense amount of information, as it always is when you're studying it. Yeah. And I walked out 15 years ago, completely misunderstanding. This was being newly taught. And I was, I think the teaching maybe wasn't as clear, not maybe, it wasn't as clear as it is now. And I, it was very easy to me, for me to misunderstand what the information was that had just been disseminated to me. By the time I walked out of that workshop, I was in tears.
Oh.
I was absolutely beside myself because I had decided from what I had heard that I had had a conflict, a biological conflict, that had gone unresolved for a significant amount of years. And through my non-education and this not being taught particularly well, I had decided that I was still in active conflict with regard to this story. And because I had remained in active conflict for all of these years, what Dr. Homer would say is when you actually finally complete the resolution of that conflict in what he calls the epicrisis moment, that because this conflict has gone on for so long, it would be the death of me.
Oh.
The physical death of me. In other words, I would not survive my own healing process in its full completion as the animal of me. So I walked out. Now you got to remember, there was really no presence of God in my family, purposefully by my mother and father. My father was brought up in an Anglican home. My mother was brought up in, I believe, a Protestant home. They both came together in this marriage and decided that they would leave God, the belief in God, and are the children's capacity to go and know this information to them.
Nice.
They would not push this on them because they had both felt in their own way very pushed and very controlled by things that they really questioned within themselves. So that's kind of where God sat in our world, right? There was no grace in our home at dinner. It wasn't that there was any nastiness, there was any judgment, there was any disbelief. There just wasn't any belief that was put forward. My mother would read the children's books from the Bible with the stories, so I was quite familiar with some of the stories, but that became just another storybook.
Right.
And anyway, I left that class 15 years ago, disturbed beyond belief. I came home, I was in tears. I said to my husband, I have to go find God, and I have to go find Jesus. I need to know this man called Jesus, and I need to know what he knew. Or I need to go find somebody in this world that knows what he knows, because, or what he knew, because there's no hope for me to live here and to survive this healing process if I don't find somebody that knows him and knows what he was capable of, or if I cannot find God. Because if I'm just left to Dr. Homer's work, there's no hope for me.
Wow.
That's kind of, you know, in other words, as the animal of me, as the biological animal of me, like the biological animal of the skunk or the mouse, he's written me off. He's basically said, what I heard is he's basically said, do not go and heal that.
Oh.
Do not touch that. You are better off remaining in the state that you are. You will live a longer and more healthy life. Just allow yourself to remain in that conflict.
Really? That's what you heard anyway.
Oh, yeah. I was just beside myself.
And is that what they teach now?
No.
Okay.
But they do teach that if you are following his work and his work only, that really when you've been in active conflict for a very, very long period of time, when certain conflicts are what we're talking about, then those conflicts are actually interfering with very, very important parts of the body, like the coronary vein and the coronary artery, and ducts within the kidneys, or ducts that are draining liver. So that's when he says, you got to be really careful. If you have had a conflict that's been active for a very long time and it is connected to these particular areas of the body, then yes, you can heal them, but you have to heal them through a step-down process where you are just healing a little bit, healing a little bit, healing a little bit, so that by the time you actually succeed at what he calls the epicrisis, that last final moment, that crescendo moment of healing, that you will have a heart attack. You will have a heart attack, but by that time you've gone through that transformer step down process, so that the heart attack's not going to take you out. But still, even after I sat in Carolyn Markland's class and listened to a greater clarity of what I had heard so disruptedly and distortedly 15 years ago, I still walked out of that class and said, I got to know Jesus.
And which is what they don't teach, which is why
right,
you have...
Yeah. And I still walked out saying, okay, but you still fail to tell me what Jesus knows and how Jesus was healing us. You know, if in fact any of those stories of the ascended masters that have been here, or the people that are that gifted and have that kind of technology available to him, and I like to use the word technology, right? Mm-hmm. That really those people that have been described in those books, who's the man that wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull?
Oh, crap.
He wrote the other book that describes the man who literally can do this, can literally put his hands on people and they are healed. I think it was a book called The Illusionist. Richard Bach. The Illusions. I gave it away to somebody and I'd like to get it back. So
it's not mine.
But he describes what I believe is a true life story of a gentleman who was very riddled with the responsibility of being able to or have been given this kind of access to this level of technology of healing, right?
Yeah, that's Illusions.
So to me, it's like what the Jesuses or the ascended masters bring to us is this consistent knowledge that says to us, we are beyond, we as humans are the highest and most evolved, strange as that is since we're so destructive, but the highest and most evolved of all of the animals of this kingdom. And what those who are quite enlightened beings say is that we have been given that additional evolution. Like we have brains that have evolved to that level because we are here to perform a specific task as the animals of the highest order on this earth. We are here to be guardians of this earth. My opinion, I think we're failing miserably at that, communally as a race. I think we have pockets of people that are not. And so I guess it's kind of like the two, you know, to really say, no, we don't have a tier two-tiered health system. The answer is, in Canada, yes, we do. We have a two-tiered health system. And guess what? You have a two-tiered capacity to heal yourself. And really, when you follow Dr. Homer's wisdom and you are only allowing yourself to heal at what he brings forward as the biological animal level of you, there can be quite a lot of pain and suffering involved in that process from beginning to end. In other words, we as humans have a real hard time seeing certain cancers that people are going through, certain cell proliferations and the breaking down of those cell proliferations as a healing process. The whole piece of it, a healing process from a conflict. We don't perceive that at all. And one of the reasons why we don't perceive it is because there's too much pain involved and too much suffering involved. But my hypothesis, my thought process was not only that I wanted to find God, that I wanted to know what Jesus knew. Not necessarily that I want to know what Jesus knows so I can put my hands on another person. I want to open and activate those parts of myself and my brain and my consciousness that have the capacity to go beyond the animal that we are, to something beyond the animal that we are denying.
Right.
Right? We are literally denying that we are something beyond, that we have a consciousness that's beyond any other animal on this planet. And therefore, we have a capacity to heal ourselves and to heal all other animals.
Right.
And to heal this earth beyond any capacity of any other living thing on this earth. And we are not exercising that. And we are not opening that, and we are not activating that. And to me, I feel intensely within my being that we are being incredibly spiritually irresponsible because we are not doing that. And I sit there for long periods of time and say, why are we not doing that? Why do we leave ourselves open to Dr. Homer's way of healing ourselves? Why do we just leave that as the way it is and then bastardize that process? Why don't we see beyond that? Why don't we accept be that? You know, what is our issue? And, you know, I struggle with that, is that we think, well, the teachers are gone, the teachers are not here. Is it that the teachers seem to be the teachers, like the Jesuses and the Muhammads? Those teachers are so wrapped up in religions that are now so wrapped up in corruption and so wrapped up in distortion that we can't accept the truth delivered by those icons because of where we've placed those icons. You know, I don't pretend to have the answers, nor do I ever think I'm going to have the answers. It was a very wonderful thing on Saturday to sit and hear that, tell them to evoke the divine healer within themselves. And then, of course, what I'm saying is that what you need to do to go beyond Dr. Homer's work? To take yourself beyond what he's saying? Because he's right. I think he's right. I do truly think he's right about how we get into biological conflict and how we get out of it and the pain and suffering that might be involved in that and the hand-holding that we might need and the understanding that we might need. But, you know, I want to prove I'm wrong. I want to show Dr. Homer that you're wrong. You're wrong that we as the human animals of this earth do not have to do it this way. We can circumvent all of that. I haven't read anywhere in anything that I have read, and I do not consider myself to be a religious person at all, but I do scour for things. I've never read that anybody has ever written that there has been any hands-on healing by Jesus, Muhammad, or another, including those that walk this earth today, that resulted in a heart attack that took that person out.
That's true.
Never seen it.
No.
Which means kind of epicrisis that Dr. Homer speaks of, when long conflicts have been held at certain places in the body, does not have to occur. We can bypass that altogether. We can rise ourselves above that. And is one of the pieces of the technology, I'm just talking about one tiny little piece of this technology that needs to become available to us, is one tiny piece of it that we need to evoke the divine healer within ourselves? Maybe. What I'm pretty certain of is that you can't do it without evoking the divine healer, without calling on a healer within yourself that is beyond the animal.
Right.
And what that animal knows.
Right.
So, there. That's what I have to say on the topic. That's where it came from. I'm still learning about it. I obviously, clearly want to understand as much as I possibly can about the technology of being that divine healer beyond the animal of me.
Right. And do you not know within yourself, though, I mean, some of the work you do is not on the biological animal. It's
no.
Most of the work you do is bringing in the divine.
Yes.
And listening to the divine and, you know, using that guidance. So, I mean, are you not already doing it? No, maybe you're not at Jesus level yet.
I'm not so sure I ever want to be there.
And, you know, when you talk about that, I think of John of God.
Uh-huh.
The guy from Brazil, and I've heard amazing things about him, and I'm curious as to what kind, you know, what that's all about. I know he has come to Toronto, and he's not traveling so much now because he's so much older, but...
And again, with him, I haven't heard that any heart attacks got created by the hands-on healing that he did, or the non-hand. In fact, what I've heard is that there are times when he doesn't do hands-on healing. and affects the kind of result that he affects.
Right.
So, you know, there is something beyond the biological of us.
Absolutely.
And I...
You want to prove it? Is that what you're trying?
I'm seeking it. You know, I'm seeking it. And I'm looking for those scientists. What I want to know is, are there scientists out there? Are there doctors out there? Are there doctors out there and scientists out there like Dr. Hommer that are studying us at a level beyond the animal, that are studying a healing process for us that is beyond the biological, that are studying, and really I'm wondering if it's really the shamans, if it's really, because I really looking at Alberto Viejo's work, or really talking about the healing from the light field down, where he talks a lot about healing the light field, and then watching it trickle into the physicality.
Right.
It's funny that we think of our light fields, or if we think about them at all, and most of us, I guess, don't, but if we think about our light field, then I think we might not think about it as something that might be contaminated with conditions that don't necessarily need to be in it.
Right.
So it's, you know, I don't have all I have is questions. Yeah. I have hundreds and hundreds of questions.
I'm pretty confident that there are definitely researchers out there and scientists out there that are studying this, and they've done it in different ways. I'm just not sure. I mean, how do you prove something like this? This is the question. Like, how can you prove stuff like this? How can you prove anything that's divine?
Well, you know, these are the things that I don't know, because I think when these things happen, what you hear when it happens in the medical profession, what you hear is, there must have been something faulty here, or, a light must not have been turned on, or, we must have gotten the wrong x-ray, rather than,
or they say miracles, but I mean... It's still hard to prove that, you know, that the body, it wasn't just time for the body to heal. I mean, it's still hard to prove how or that it was strictly the divine that did
well,
this.
Well, I like Gray Braden when he talks about miracles, mm-hmm. because he basically says we call a miracle because we do not understand the technology. Mm-hmm. And because we do not understand the technology, to us it is magic. And then that opens us up to the concept of miracles. So it's almost like... We get to believe in the Santa Claus because we don't know how that works. Right? And I thought that was a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
A miracle's a miracle to us. It's perceived that way because we don't get the technology of it. And I clearly don't get the technology of us as the divine healers of us and what that looks like. And I wonder, because Dr. Hommer will literally give you the step-by-step process for the biological healing of the animal, any animal. He will outline it. So you can literally hold somebody's hand through the healing process from cancer, because you can tell them step-by-step what they're going to go through.
Wow.
Right? But to me, it's like I work in my office. People look at me when they've left one of the sessions and say, what can I expect? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Please observe. I'll be interested. What I think you should be able to expect is for you to be able to observe with your own eyes that you are creating something different than you created yesterday in your environment. What I think you can expect if we have been successful at the rewiring process or the changing of something in the light field, that you should not then be creating your life with the same level of distress or the same level of negativity that you saw available to you yesterday. So I've seen astounding reports. Like, how could I invent, how could I even say this is what you should expect? Mm-hmm. When a woman leaves my office and we've done a pretty astounding piece of work, a real, real interesting realization from deep within herself, and I leave her to be the observer of her world now, from the acceptance point of you are the creator of your life. And she goes and observes her world, and literally emails or phones me back, the true story, phones me back and says, okay, this has been 5 days since we did that piece of work. I know my children. I know how they behave. You know how they behave. Let me tell you what I have seen in this last 5 days. My daughter is making her own food and cooking at the stove, which she's never done. My son picks up the vacuum cleaner and starts to clean all the floors in the house on Saturday. Never helps with the household chores at all since he turned the magic teenage years age, whatever that was, 15 or 16 or whatever it was. It was just like a huge shift in this kid's consciousness. Used to be a very helpful little boy, and all of a sudden turned a certain age, and it was like a whole other computer program kicked in. So what she started to see is this. How could I tell her to look for those kinds of responses? And then the most interesting one is because there is a relationship between herself and these children that's a very clingy, kind of almost codependent relationship.
Which and, most people have with their children, but yes.
And what? But this one really, to that point. What she saw was that her son had had an 18th birthday during this five-day span of time. She was working on the day of this birthday, was called by the son to say, when are you coming home? In kind of a snitty, normally snitty, teenage, you know, disrespectful way that he would speak to her. Mm-hmm. And she basically responded by, you know, I'm getting home as soon as I can. If you can't wait, there's a separation in the family between mother and father. If you can't wait, go without me. She comes home an hour and a half later, and the father has taken all three children out for that birthday dinner.
Wow.
Now, that might not seem astounding to you, but for the oldest child to have gone out to celebrate anybody's birthday, she's never done so since the time that she was tiny and had no voice of her own. Never has she cooperated with going, and she goes.
Wow.
Never has this woman been left by her children to go and do something without her.
Right.
Never have they showed her communally as a group or independently that level of independence from her. So she literally came home to an empty house with no one in it. She could make food for herself without considering anybody else in that process. She could be silent and quiet. And then literally says to me as she's reporting all of this, she said, "I think it's the first time that I have been alone, maybe ever, in my whole life."
Wow.
And I enjoyed the night. And then they all came home happy, happy, bonded together. She said, "I've never seen that in my family." And I'm going, wow. Now, how am I... How do you document something like that? Through Dr. Homer's meticulous work. And the answer is you couldn't.
Right.
In other words, as soon as we changed that way of her behaving, that way of her protecting, that way of her defining her own security or creating her world, it gave permission for each of these children and this husband to be free to operate dramatically differently than they had ever operated before. It really lends credence to this idea of stop trying to heal another.
Yeah.
And work it out for yourself. In other words, recognize that you are the creator of your life and that you potentially have bound these people in the ways that you don't even like, but you don't realize how much you've wrapped them up and made them wear that dark costume with that cape and made them suck your energy.
It's a hard one to grasp and understand because we're so, I mean, it's so common to blame the other person. Like, you know, there's taking responsibility, but when you get to the point where, you know, your life is a mess and, you know, you can pinpoint each experience to prove that point, it's hard to imagine that if you shift, everybody around you shifts. And yet we've seen it time and time again.
Isn't that lovely what you just said? that we are so busy proving our point, right? Dr. Phil addresses this. He has addressed it more than a few times. I like some of his Dr. Philisms. And he says, there are times that we are more interested in being right than we are in being happy, or that we are in being at peace. Or he doesn't say freedom, but I will include it, or that we are in being free. In other words, just more interested, the ego of us, more interested in being right. In other words, I do think that we can do that with everything that we believe. We can pick out the moments, as scientists of our life, we can pick out the moments that prove that this person has not supported me. Look, over there, he didn't support me there, and he didn't support me there. But if that's what you're out to prove that day, if your agenda is that, then you're not even looking at the 14 times that day that he did support you. You're not even interested in writing those down because they don't prove your point. They don't make you right. So it was a very lovely thing that you said. I do remember it must have been, well, it had to have been quite a long time ago now because my son was very little and we were down at the Easter parade in the beach and they had an elephant that year and they've only had an elephant once and it was a long time ago. But I remember looking up at the sky that day when we were down there and my husband said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm giving the divine permission to show me that I'm wrong. To show me how wrong I am about the possibilities for this marriage, how wrong I am about the possibilities for myself as a mother, how wrong I am about my life and what's possible for it. And there were a couple of other things that I had added into that mix. In other words, what I was literally saying is, I'm not interested in being right anymore. And I'm not interested in being a know-it-all anymore. I'm interested in what your input is and what you have to say about all these different things that I've thrown up in the air to you today. Because I don't like the way I'm creating my marriage. I don't like the way I'm creating motherhood for myself. I don't like the way I'm showing up. I love that phrase, showing up.
Yeah, me too.
I don't like the way I'm showing up here, the way I'm showing up here, the way I'm showing up here. But I'm smart enough to know that I am creator of my life. And I'm also smart enough to see and to admit that I like to flip and be right. And my husband has said it a million times, and it's true. I like to be right. And now more and more so since I have been under the wing of Virginia, I'm really, really, really not so much involved in the being right piece. I just want to know the truth. I just want to know the truth, and I want to know the truth that I can handle. You know, give me the amount of truth today that I can handle. And let me teach the amount of truth to the class that I'm teaching that they can handle. Let me have the wisdom to not hand them too much on that silver plate. Let me have the wisdom to know when I should hold back and what truths should be held back. Because they can't handle them. And because there's another way to get at this problem other than to deliver that truth. Right? Yeah. I have a lovely radionics machine in my office. And it has the capacity to be a diagnostic tool, to be a healing tool. I don't use it so much anymore. I have a very love-hate relationship with that machine because to me there are not good checks and balances on me, the practitioner. There are not enough of those in that machine to keep me honest. But I bring it forward for several reasons because there is a vial in that machine that is the frequency of cancer, which means the frequency of, as Homer would say, that carries the frequency of, is there mutated cell proliferation happening in this area? Is there cell augmentation happening in this area? Is the vial, when you put it in, picking that up in this area? Do you know that any time that I have found that frequency to be a match, I have literally gotten quiet and said, Divine, guides, thank you for showing up. Is this mine to deliver? Does she need to know this today? Never has the answer been yes.
Really?
Never has the answer been yes. First of all, I am not a doctor. I have no capacity to diagnose a thing, no legal right to diagnose a thing. It would put me in incredible amount of jeopardy to be able to do so. And more, what I'm seeing is, you don't have to. You don't have to deliver the C word to anybody. So then I say, okay, if the C word is not to be spoken out of my mouth today, if it's not to be heard from me at all, then what is my role here? What is my role here? What am I to do? And it's really amazing that then I will be given directive to go back to a certain time, to start asking her questions about a certain time. And I start to get really excited because I'm going, based on Homer's work, I'm going, oh, you're leading me back there, aren't you? You're leading me back to the root of her biological conflict. But we're not talking the C word. We don't have to deliver the C word to get this job done. We don't have to put that level of truth out on the table that this person cannot handle, that they will literally close up tighter than a drum, put a whole bunch of layers of homeland security up so that I can't get through to them.
Right.
Fascinating. Right? It was the same kind of place that I was in when I was working with a colleague of mine about 8 or 9 years ago, and I was on a tangent to understand darkness. Okay. I wasn't living it. I wanted to understand it. I wanted to kind of make peace with it. And so with this gentleman who I was in a relationship with at that time, not a physical relationship with, but a kind of a colleague relationship with, it was quite a difficult time because he was literally psychically attacking me through this entire 3-year ordeal. But having said that, I had pages and pages and pages of the names and the understandings of all these different negative energies.
Okay.
The names that they wanted to go by, where they came from, whether they were from this earth, whether they were created by us, what forged their connection here, what their purpose was. I mean, I really just had pages of that. What I started to realize is people can't handle that. They can't handle that. You know, they have to look at me and say, you're a wingnut, because literally they can't handle that much truth. And, you know, they don't need it.
Right.
They don't need that much truth. They don't need to know that there's something, there's a cord connected into them that's connected to something that calls itself the Prince of Darkness. Is that a need to know piece? No. What they may need to know is you've got a cord that's connecting you to some dark kind of interference, and I think we should just sever it, cut it, scramble the frequencies of it, and get you aligned with another way to satisfy that need that is light and coming from a place of love. How do you feel about that? Do we have to bring in the Prince of Darkness? Do we have to mention him? Do we have to mention cancer? Do we have to talk about extraterrestrials? Do we have to even open up our mouth and say implant?
Right. Right. Now, it's an interesting question because how many people, you know, hear that? Like, I can't tell you what, because I do clearing work. You know, the people that come that say, I've been cursed. And they're so attached to the fact that they've been cursed. They've lived it for so long that their whole identity is connected with, I've been cursed. And so they don't really want to let it go. They say they want to let it go. They pay money to let it go. But they don't really want to let it go because their whole identity is connected. Because we, you know, either we get positive reinforcement or we get negative reinforcement. And people that, you know, thrive on negative reinforcement because of the way they've been brought up, need that negative reinforcement, need to know that it's like their ego feeds them that they want that more negative connection because it gives them energy in different ways. And
or it may be that they do not believe anymore that they can have a positive one, right?
Right.
That I can't ever really know a connection that is forged in a basis of love. So I'll take anything because I'm so starved for touch and I'm so starved for closeness and I'm so starved for belonging that I'll just take what I can get. And I don't know any other way to get it than to steal it or manipulate it or try to control it. It's interesting that you bring that up because to me, I call that state that you're talking about when I'm teaching in the energy medicine class, I call it psychological reversals, which means it's really quite hilarious. Like you've got somebody that comes in to my office and I think I'm quite expensive, right? And one of the reasons why I'm quite expensive, but not too expensive that I don't think the everyman could come into my office and I structure it that way, right? And so here we are. You come in for your session. One of the first things that I will say, you know, in other words, that person is saying, I'm here because I want to lose weight. I'm here because I want to be thinner. I'm here because I've got this problem and I want to see if you can help me to resolve it. Whatever the problem is, right? Cysts on the ovaries, or maybe it's just relationship problems with my husband. And somebody told me you might be able to help me with those. Like, really? Somebody told me that I was the creator of my life. How silly is this? And that you might be able to help me to create a different life with my husband. Okay, let's get to work. One of the first things that I will do is use basic muscle testing to test to see, are you in a level of cooperation today?
Right.
With me, with yourself, with your guides, everything. Are you in that level of cooperation? Mind, all of your minds. Bodies, all of your bodies. Spirit, heart, soul, all spaces in between. We can't forget the spaces in between. Okay. And then are you fully present? And after we assess that, I will literally, using a basic muscle testing, say to them, would you please say out loud, I am willing, wanting, ready, and able to get over this problem. Whatever this problem is, they have to fill in this problem, okay? That is four of the psychological reversals, only four of them. And they will either say yes or no using their arm, meaning the subconscious mind is either online with that or not online with that. And it's absolutely hilarious that somebody would come into my office, put $210 down on the table, courtesy of the new HST tax.
Yes.
And that they would not be, they might be willing, they might be wanting, but they are not ready. They don't think that they are ready. And they are not capable. In other words, they don't believe that they have the power to get over this problem. Readiness is interesting because readiness is all about what you are believing within yourself you're going to have to go through to get over this problem. So I'm not ready for this because I perceive that it's going to mean divorce. Or I'm not ready for this because I perceive it's going to mean I have to leave this job. I'm not ready for this because I don't have enough money in my savings account to leave this job. And that's the way I think it's all going to fall, right? So that's the readiness piece, right? It's called, I'm not ready for the crap that I've designed in my head that is going to follow my decision to be ready to do this work, okay? So those are the four reversals. But then there are other ones. And one of them is identity. Right? So then we're going to test, okay, is it good for you to get over this problem? Yes or no. Is it good for others for you to get over this problem? Yes or no. Is it safe for you to get over this problem? Is it safe for others to get over this, for you to get over this problem? Are you going to do whatever is truly and truthfully necessary to get over this problem? Whether that's the truly idea that you need to go for massages or that you need to take supplements or that you need to face this person and really speak your truth, whatever it is. But the truth of what that is, not some lie or illusion. Do you believe you're going to lose your identity because you've gotten over this problem? And do you believe you're going to be deprived if you get over this problem? Okay. But there's one that's really kind of cool. Do you believe it will be beneficial for you to get over this problem? Yes or no. Do you allow it to be beneficial for another? For you to get over this problem. Now this one's an interesting one. Because this one, when the reversal says, no, I do not allow this to be, I don't want this to be beneficial to others, what you are in is revenge mode. In other words, you're sitting there saying, I'm not going to get over this problem. I'm going to pay you this $200, but I'm not going to get over this problem because I'm in revenge mode. I'm in teaching mode. I'm going to make sure my father knows or my mother knows or that teacher knows how they hurt me, how they ruined my life. And they can't know how they ruined my life until I become the creator of the ruined life.
Right. I know that one.
Yeah. So I'm busy creating the ruined life to teach them a lesson because my life is ruined now. So there is no hope for my life. So the best that I can make of this life is to teach them their lessons.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Well,
right? It's sad.
And it's so unconscious.
Oh, very. Absolutely.
You know, so it's not like you're, you know, consciously, although some people, when you're in revenge, you certainly know that feeling of revenge.
Oh, but most times people don't.
Yeah.
Most times they do not know. They do not accept that they are the creator of their life, and they do not know that they are participating in creating this ruined life, this damaged life, this broken life, so that they can teach somebody what it is that they think they need to know. Right? And at the end of the day, that kind of brings forward this idea that we think of our souls as these cleaned up balls of light.
Right.
Right? Like we do.
We do.
Think of our souls as these, but our souls are not this cleaned up ball of light.
Right.
And so the earliest, the indication that we have that might be true is when we incarnate into a family where there is so much darkness. Like we incarnate into a family where the mother has no capacity to love us and perhaps gives us away. We incarnate into a family where the father leaves before we're even born. We incarnate into a family where we're adopted into a family that really adopts us to fill some sort of need, but basically neglects us. Right. We can either stay in that place of blame. I am the way I am, and I have this ruined life because I never got the support that I needed at the very early beginning in my darkness. And because I never got that support, because I never got that mother's love, and I never got that father's love, and I never got that support, this is why I turned out to be the way I am. And I sit there and go, if you never got that support in the earliest years of your darkness, it's because your soul could not perceive that it deserved it. In other words, it's a reflection of, my suggestion is, it's either a reflection of where our soul was stuck in its own evolution, what darkness was still overcoming the soul as it incarnates onto this plane for another life. So to create the parenting, the loss of mother's love, the lack of mother's love, the lack of father's love, the lack of support. All of these things, these people become not only the darkness that we couldn't create anything else. There was no option for us to create anything else from a soul level. We were so corrupted. But these people also become, when we finish the game of blaming others, they become our greatest mirrors.
Yeah.
Because we look and go, oh, that's what I believed. That's the costume you're wearing, and you've been wearing it for a whole lifetime for me. I picked you because you were wearing that costume, and you stay wearing that costume for me. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You did that for me. So that one day when I was ready to stop blaming, that I could wake up and remember who you are. And then through the remembering of who you are, I could remember who I am. And I could remember how loved I am and how loved I have always been in the darkness and in the light. It's so hard for us to see how loved we are in the darkness.
Yeah.
Really hard. Right? It's an incredible challenge to be able to sit in your darkness that you have created in this moment and look and say, it's all divine. And believe it. And believe it with every speck of your being to know there is a divineness here in this darkness that has been created for me and that I have created for me. whether I create it from down here in my lower consciousness or whether it was created for me from my higher consciousness because it was time for me to see something. I've always been very deeply in control of this life at a lower level or a higher one.
Yeah.
Right? It was kind of like a woman who was helping me with a piece of work, and she said, "Tracy, where do you cut it off? Where do you cut off your capacity to be able to recognize how cared for you are? Do you just cut it off when people pet you and caress you and feed you dinner and take you out for dinner?" And I'm going, "Take me out for dinner, that'd be good." Do you just cut it off there? Do you just cut it off when somebody comes in and delivers you roses and somebody gives you a nice bath rub and draws your bath? Or are you capable of perceiving that that husband that didn't hear you that day and continued to not hear you that day was caring for you, aiding you to mirror this, because anything that gets to you is you, to guide you to something that needs to be cleared within you that day? Can you go there? Can you go to a place of how cared for you are when your best friend betrays you and turns on you for what perceives to be no reason? Can you go there? Or do you cut it off and say, "I'm not cared for. They don't love me. They don't care about me. I am alone. I have no one." You know, yeah, it's fascinating. In other words, can we see ourselves as cared for by that darkness?
It's hard.
It's hard. It's really hard.
Because you could have those moments of gratitude. But when you're thinking of the gratitude, you're not thinking of those moments. You know,
yeah.
You're trying to pick out the moments. And I'm reading a book by Michael Brown called The Presence Process. And, you know, it's a 10-week process. It's very interesting. But, you know, we're at like week 9. And he talks about what you're saying about the mirrors and how they're just the messengers. And what are the messages that they're sending us? And, you know, how everything, you know, we tend to say, you know, "Oh, he doesn't love me, and he's, you know, always has to be right," you know. And then we go, "Well, wait a minute, crap, that's my mirror, right? Like, that's exactly what, even though he's saying it or doing it, I see in him what I need to learn in me." And then, you know, those moments are easier still than the moments where you feel utterly betrayed or utterly, you know, abandoned, or, you know, that those are the moments that you kind of, it takes you back. It's like, whoa, it takes you back to that original core, issue that, whatever it is. But I mean, usually we're working on, you know, some deep core issue that a lot of times it's around abandonment. A lot of times when you take it back far enough, it's about abandonment from God, because we feel we've been abandoned by God by being on this planet, because that's what religion sort of tells us, is that he's somebody out there and not somebody inside. And so we go through this entire process of how we are trying. This world right now is so masculine and so independent that we feel we have to do everything alone. And so we go through the abandonment thing. And I mean, I think it's a really fascinating time we're in, because we know stuff. We try and work through it, but to go through the darkness, as you say, to go through that darkness and to actually see it with love.
And yeah. So it's interesting, again, you say something that kind of goes, wow, okay, yeah, okay. So here's one of the things that I was into. I don't know what this class that I'm teaching right now actually thinks of me, because I'm throwing some really bizarre things at them. So, you know, they've got journals so they can work it out. But what I was suggesting to them, Dr. Homer talks about the biological conflicts and how these biological conflicts are a conflict of abandonment, or they're an indigestible morsel conflict, or an abandonment conflict, or a territorial anger conflict. I mean, he's got them all nailed, right?
Nice.
But I kind of went, wow, you know what? If the scientists are right about the fact that everything that we're seeing was created by a giant Big Bang, right? That this energy that we are calling God literally existed as some ball and then went bang. Then I sat there and went, I want to say Jesus. Then I sat there and went, Jesus, I think we're all in a giant separation conflict from the bang. Like, I think we are still these little balls of light that are in conflict with the idea that it all went bang and now we can't go home. It all went bang and there is no home. It all went bang and our home was destroyed.
That's interesting.
It all went bang and we can never be one again. We can't be one. Freaking cool thought. Like it all went bang and we can't get home. It kind of echoes the birth moment, right?
Right.
It was not a bang, but it all gets delivered. I get delivered and then I can't go home. Like I can't go home. I can't go home to the home as I knew it then. In other words, you're 21, 22, 25, 26, or 7. Your mother doesn't want you back in her womb. You can never go back to that home. And so I think the same struggle.
The home of creation. I mean, because that's what it was, right?
It's
the home of creation.
That's right. Hmm. So I think it's kind of the same struggle is we're going through it with mother. In other words, I am challenged in my capacity to accept that I am still one with her, even though there is no umbilical cord between us anymore, that I am still one with her, and yet I am also separate from her and my own unique individual. We really struggle with that concept of being able to accept what I believe the monks call the paradox, which is I am both. I am both separate and one. I am one with everything. I am one with her. I am one with mother. I am one with all that created me. But I am also a separate, autonomous individual of my own unique light. I think we struggle with that immensely. The same way we struggle with how can I accept that I am one with something that went bang.
Right. That's very interesting.
And I can't get home to my mother the same way. There is no home available to me in either facet, not my real mother or that divine mother that went bang and left me here in conflict. And so now that I kind of see that, I go, wow. Everywhere I look now in my office, all I see is example after example after example of our conflict separation and how we're creating it. It's all the same. Oh, that's how you're creating your separation conflict today, because we are creators of our world. Oh, that's how you're creating. Oh, that's a very ingenious way that you've created separation between that organ of your body and that organ of your body. Oh, that's a really ingenious way that you've created separation between your thyroid and the rest of your flipping glands. That's a really ingenious way that you've created separation between your mother and yourself. Wow, that's really cool. Look at you. You're the creator of that level of separation. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Conflict separation. And we keep creating them because we don't know how to resolve it. Because I'm just thinking, we keep creating it. We're in this loop. We're in this never-ending loop of being the creators of separation conflict because we don't believe there's any home to go home to. And we can't get home. So we just live in hell. We just live in a hell where we go round and round and round creating different versions of separation conflict because we can't get home.
Wow.
Because there is no home. Not anymore. So really, at the end of the day, I don't know In other words, I don't know if any part of what I just said is truth, or whether, like, in other words, whether there was a Big Bang,
right?
Whether there is a separate, I believe that we are showing ourselves that, yes, we are separation conflicted. I believe I'm accurate about that, right?
Yes.
But whether that is the truth that there was a Big Bang, what I'm pretty certain of is that we believe it.
Yeah.
We believe the illusion that something got destroyed that was one, and we are now a particle of that destruction, and that there's, because it was destroyed, we can't get back there. And we can try to get back there, but it's kind of the impossible dream because there's nothing to get back to.
Interesting.
And I think that's why they say this speck of pure love and pure light that resides within you. In other words, the home that once was this big ball, a speck of it resides within you. So to go home is to go to that place and that realization that still lives within you, but does not live as a giant ball anymore, that you can go back to the same way.
Unless you believe the hologram theory, where that speck is really all of it, even though we see it as separate. But
see, do you see how confusing it is for a conscious mind? It's like, no, it's like, oh my God, just take me there. just guide me there. It's all too confusing and too big and too vast for my conscious mind to even grasp.
Which is what we keep trying to do. We keep trying to understand something that in our mind, the way it is not possible.
It's true. I was speaking to a person that had passed away. I was at her funeral services about 4 weeks ago, and she had passed away, and we had about a four-hour conversation after I left the visitation while I was driving home in Toronto traffic, that even at that hour took me a million years to get home in. And we were together in some level of speaking back and forth for quite a long time. And when she began to talk to me, she was in a very dark place, still very angry at the humanness of her, still very much seeing, what did she say to me initially? She said, very angry at the human body for its incapacities, and very angry at the human mind. She called the human mind the most archaic word processor. She said, what we ask ourselves to do within the limitations of that human mind is an impossible dream that could never be achieved. This idea of ascension or understanding of this, of any possible connection to this level of divinity. And she wasn't there yet. She wasn't there within herself at a soul level to be able to even recognize her own connection to that divinity at this particular time. She was just too angry.
Okay.
Angry that this human body and mind had limited her
right
in these capacities, to the point where she saw there was no way I was succeeding at this silly game. Like, it was just a silly game from beginning to end, just a stupid, silly game that had an impossible end that could never be achieved because of the body and mind that I chose to incarnate into. I mean, she was just furious with humanity, with the humanness component, and it was fascinating. And by the end of that 4 hours with her, she was already starting to rise.
Nice.
She was already starting to become enlightened. She was no longer angry with the human mind. And she started to realize that she'd chosen that vessel. That she'd chosen that vessel. And she'd chosen that vessel with that kind of mind and with those kinds of filters. Because it was an echo for where her soul was.
Right.
And she really started to get it. She really started to get that there were other souls that had chosen other bodies that would operate with different minds and different mindsets, that would have a far greater capacity to go the places that people were suggesting that she needed to go.
Right.
but she couldn't get there. Right. It was also very interesting that she says to me, she said, Tracy, you were very accurate when you were speaking to me that day when I was alive about the fact that I was more interested in revenge than I was in getting better. She said, now from where I stand, I can say to you, you are absolutely accurate about that. But she said, what I want to say to you now is, You were always trying to look inside of me. You were always trying to go inside of me. She said, you always told me to go inside of me, that the answers were inside of me, that I needed to go. And she said, Tracy, I couldn't find them. They weren't there. I want you to know that you were never going to find the answers that you were looking for from inside of me, because they were so deeply removed from me by that time, so deeply walled off, that they weren't accessible to me as a living person. They weren't accessible to you. And so I don't know what that piece of information tells you, but you do need to look at doing something a little differently than you've been doing in your office. And you can talk to those people you call your guides and what you call your divine, because I'm sure with that piece of information, they'll guide you as to how you might be able to work with somebody like me in the future. Man, it was really quite profound.
Yeah.
Very profound.
Wow.
To have somebody who was passed on say, that wasn't inside of me.
Right.
You told me it was, but it wasn't. Those answers were not available to me from inside of me. Huh. Yeah, it was fascinating.
It would be. Well, we have gone over, and it's been a very fascinating time talking with you, Tracy, as it always is. We never know where we're going, but this one was very interesting. Wow. Well, we'll have to have you back, of course, and well, thank you.
Yeah, that was fun. You're welcome. That was great.
All right. So we'll be back next week.